The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Last night, we hosted a barbecue here at Edstone for all of the neighbors here locally, or at least a good many of them. We had quite a few from the homes nearby stop in and enjoy a meal and fellowship, including the family that lives in the gatehouse out by the main road, the house that we pass when we leave Edstone or when we return. And then also the family that owns the 900 acres or so that surround the community, that surround the neighborhood here. They turned out, accepted the invitation. We were able to spend some time talking to them. Brad McDonald greeted everyone when they arrived and explained to them what we've been doing here for the past 6 or 7 months. Of course, all of the neighbors knew that we were doing a lot. As they saw or have been seeing just a steady stream of tradesmen, cars and vans and trucks coming in, and quite a few of our employees working out on the grounds daily. And so they knew there was a lot going on, but they were quite happy to visit the site itself, to enjoy the picnic atmosphere outside on the patio. And quite a few of them also went inside Edstone Hall and saw some of the renovations that we've been doing these past many months. So it was a wonderful evening, a good opportunity for us here to get to know our neighbors all that provided for the barbecue, the students that put the time into preparing the meal, setting up the patio and so on, just made for a wonderful event. Well, I'd like to start today by just talking about some of the statistics that I know you're interested in. Many of you faithful listeners who tune in, who listen to us on the KPCG website or live there in Edmond, Oklahoma. Friday on the website, it was our biggest day of traffic, really by far. We had 960 total visits just on Friday. This is last Friday, coming from 793 users. And all totaled, there were 2,269 page views on that particular day. And I thought it was interesting that the average session for these visitors was 59 minutes and 13 seconds, nearly an hour. So that shows that a lot of you are not just tuning in on occasion, but that you're listening for a long time. If you add up all the hours from all the users and the total visits, it really does add up. Just to give you a breakdown on some of the programming, Friday's Trumpet Daily radio show, the one titled He Wanted to Start a Race War, there were 167 people who listened to the podcast on demand. Again, this is just at the kpcg.fm website, and most of them, 167 of them, listened to the program in its entirety. Now, when you add to that the listeners that tune in through the Trumpet site, thetrumpet.com, we had an additional 1,100 that listened to at least part of the podcast on demand. Now, the Trumpet visitors don't listen to the program quite as long as the faithful few that regularly visit the kpcg.fm site. But put together, again, you can see the small but growing audience, 167 from the KPCG site, and then 1,100 from thetrumpet.com. And that's just on demand at those two websites. Of course, we're making this program and others on KPCG available through iTunes and on SoundCloud. And of course, it's playing live over the airwaves in Edmond, Oklahoma. So when you add to that these other ways that people can listen, again, you get an idea of about how many are listening here to this new radio station and to these new programs. Friday's Trumpet Hour, by the way, hosted by Joel Hilliker, the one about the Greece economy and why the Pope can't save the world. There were 86 people on the KPCG site who listened to, again, nearly the entire program. And then you add to that 700 more that listened on the Trumpet site, thetrumpet.com. So add to those numbers, again, whoever listened live on the radio or through SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn, you get an idea, as I say, of the size of our audience here at the start of this production. The TuneIn followers, by the way, we just told you about this 2 weeks ago, to sign up if you have a phone, if you have some kind of mobile device and you're out and about and you want to listen to KPCG on your phone or your device, to become a subscriber to the TuneIn app so that you can listen to us anywhere. And thus far, we have 233 followers on TuneIn and quite a few of you that have left comments, favorable comments on that particular app as well. So if you don't have that yet for your phone, I'd highly recommend it, as it's a great little app for you to follow, well, pretty much any radio station around the world. I'll just give you a little bit of feedback. This, again, from South Africa. This came in last week. And this woman writes, "What a wonderful blessing it is to be able to listen to a radio station with real news, real music, and interesting interviews." She says, "How great not to have to turn off the radio due to bad language or distasteful interviews or commentary." She says, "I've been incredibly privileged to be able to listen to God's radio station live from my home. And when I go back to work again next week, I'll be able to tune in and fill my mind with positive input and block out the office politics and bad vibes." So she listens at home and at work. And she says, "It's a true wonder to be able to listen live from here in the sticks." She's out in the sticks, she says, a long way away from Edmond, Oklahoma. And yet she faithfully tunes in. I'm not sure which device she uses or if it's just the computer. In any event, if you're out there, if you're a long distance from Edmond, even as we are here in the UK, let us know what you think. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to receive some feedback. We'd like to know what it is or what device you're using, what app you're using, whether you listen on the KPCG site or at the trumpet.com. Just send us your feedback to td@kpcg.fm. That's td@kpcg.fm. Well, I thought I'd start with this story. This is from Jerusalem. Yesterday in Jerusalem, there was a Palestinian man who stabbed an Israeli policeman multiple times before the police officer then pulled his gun and shot the assailant or the terrorist or the attacker. And both the policeman and the terrorist were seriously injured in this altercation. But I just want to read to you what the Times of Israel had to say or how it reported on this incident. It says police said they closed off the area. I think it happened at the Damascus Gate, which is the entrance that quite a few of the Palestinians go in and out of there in the old city. It says police said they closed off the area after the incident and deployed large numbers of reinforcements across the city. So as soon as it happened, I mean, Israel, the police force, there was a pretty strong show of force after just this one attack. Notice this, though. It says Jerusalem police chief Chico Edry told reporters on the scene that, quote, "the officer acted heroically." He acted heroically. He added that, quote, "in any incident in which police officers or civilians are attacked, the terrorist should be killed at the scene and the incident ended as quickly as possible." I read that yesterday and I thought, I wonder how long that police chief would last in an American city. How long would he last as a police chief of an American force? Can you even imagine an American police chief telling reporters, "If our policemen are attacked, their assailants must be immediately shot at the scene to end this altercation as quickly as possible"? You can't imagine that. Can you imagine a U.S. police chief saying, "Look, if he jumps on you and starts punching you in the face or ramming your head against the pavement, you shoot the assailant. If he lunges at you and tries to grab your gun so that he can shoot you, so that he can kill you, you shoot the assailant. You shoot the terrorist. You're not going to hear that sort of reasoning. You're not going to hear that kind of advice coming from a police chief in America. Not in this current political climate. In too many cases, as we've been seeing, America's policemen are on the defensive. America's policemen are being told, you let him go if he resists arrest. America's policemen are being told, don't fight back. If they lunge at your weapon, just pull away. If they decide to riot because they're unhappy about something, you give them space to do that. Give them space to riot. Give them space to be violent. All too often, we see these kinds of altercations happen. And then we have to, even as the media jumps to conclusions, we often have to wait days before the police chief can even say anything, can even come out with any kind of a definitive statement in support of his police officers. And in some cases, there is no support. But here was a case yesterday in Jerusalem where a policeman was attacked and he retaliated with force. And the police chief on the same day said he acted heroically. And furthermore, if our officers are under attack, they should immediately shoot. That terrorist, that attacker should be killed. What a difference. You can see why. Israel's biggest cities are safer than America's. Look at all of the neighbors that surround Israel. And how many of Israel's neighbors hate the Jews? They want to see the Jewish state obliterated. And yet, in many ways, you can walk, as I have many times, through Jerusalem, even through East Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, wherever else. And there's a lot of safety, a lot more safety than there would be in some of America's big cities. Now, that said, if you step back and look at the bigger picture, in many ways, as we've talked to you about before, with respect to the Jewish state, in many ways, their soldiers are being handcuffed in the same way that American police officers are, whether it's in Gaza or Lebanon or wherever. So many of the same problems are there. However, just given what's been happening in the United States in recent months, that, as I say, that story from Jerusalem yesterday just caught my eye because I thought, how different that is, how different that response is from what we're seeing on the streets of America right now. My father wrote a cover story for the August Trumpet about our police being under attack. That'll be coming out here in the next week or two online, and it'll be out in the Trumpet magazine here in a few weeks, I suppose. But that's going to be a very important article, and I'm sure it'll be one we refer to quite a lot. The police in America, how they're the ones under attack, and not just from these assailants, but from the media, from politicians, from entire communities. It's breaking down. It's breaking down the system of law and order in the United States. Notice this story. This came out, I believe, on Friday from the AP. Mexico deports more Central Americans than the United States. How about that? Mexico deports more Central Americans than the United States does. This article says Mexico now deports more Central American migrants than the U.S., a dramatic shift since the U.S. asked Mexico for help a year ago with a spike in illegal migration, especially among unaccompanied minors. You remember this story from a year ago, back in the spring of 2014, the summer of 2014? All these young people that were just streaming into the United States from Central America, working their way up all the way through Mexico, getting on this dangerous train ride, and then arriving at the border there, America's southern border, and then streaming into the United States. And the United States, as this AP article brings out, pleading with Mexico, do something to help us. It says between October and April, Mexico apprehended 92,889 Central Americans. In the same time period, the U.S. detained 70,000 or so, other than Mexican migrants. It says the vast majority from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. It says that was a huge reversal. Look, this is the AP talking about a dramatic shift or a huge reversal from the same period a year ago when the wave of migrants and unaccompanied minors from Central America was building. It says from October 2013 to April 2014, the United States apprehended 159,000 other than Mexicans, three times the 49,000 or almost 50,000 Central Americans detained by Mexico. So, as you know, Mexico was just letting them go on through, and then they were getting to the United States and coming right on through. And then it reached a crisis point last year at this time, and the U.S. asked Mexico for help, and then immediately Mexico was able to clamp down on it. Immediately. Who knows what the U.S. did to pressure them or to ask them. But whatever it was, Mexico acted, and there were immediate results. Which makes you wonder, why can't the United States authorities act and get immediate results? Well, we've been talking a lot about America's immigration crisis, and some few others have as well. But their message, it's not being amplified nearly enough. Last week, we referred to that article about 121 murders. Murders by illegal aliens. By those that have come into the United States illegally. It's pretty sad, isn't it, when Mexico is tougher on illegal immigration than the United States of America. That says a lot, that AP story from Friday. Maybe the United States could learn a few things from Mexico. Maybe the United States could learn a few things from Israel. We're seeing a breakdown in law and order. We're seeing U.S. border officers not enforcing the law when it comes to illegal immigration. We're seeing politicians not enforce the law when it comes to illegal immigration. We're seeing policemen not enforce the law because of pressure, because they're afraid. Because everyone's against them. What is this leading to? In America Under Attack, my father wrote, "Do you realize how deadly dangerous this trend of lawlessness is? Very few people do. But it gives profound insight into the real nature of the threat facing America today. Few people, you see, realize just how dangerous this trend really is." And as America Under Attack brings out, I mean, we have some insight into where this is leading just because we saw the same thing play out spiritually in a spiritual nation, in a church, the church that Herbert Armstrong raised up. And after he died, well, you look at what the devil attacked. He went right after truth and law and the enforcement of law in the spiritual sense. And the entire church was destroyed. You don't even hear about it anymore today. This great work that went right around the world and that was on more than 400 TV stations before Mr. Armstrong died and had a Plain Truth magazine going to 8 million subscribers. 100,000 members, millions of co-workers and donors. All of that just fell apart and disappeared because of lawlessness. As my father wrote in America Under Attack, when Satan attacked the church, he got people in at the top who cast all the truth to the ground. It is logical that he would use the same tactics when attacking the nations of Israel. That's the most efficient and destructive way to do it. Then he can use them to wage an assault from within on the truth and the law. See, we see him using the same strategy today. And history is repeating itself. What happened on the spiritual level is now being repeated within the United States of America. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. And the live stream, as I said at the top, can be reached at kpcg.fm. Email us, if you like, at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Herbert Armstrong often said it was more difficult to unlearn an erroneous supposed truth than it is to learn a new truth. Even after 58 years of faithfully serving God, he had not fully and clearly realized the significance of the fact revealed in Genesis 3, 22-24, that, in fact, God had closed the Holy Spirit and eternal life to mankind in general until the removal of Satan at the second coming of Jesus Christ. Traditional Christian teaching has always assumed there is a contest between God and Satan, that God has been trying desperately to get the world saved. In other words, God had sent Jesus Christ at his first coming to try to win this ongoing war against Satan. Traditional Christianity has taught that whosoever will may come and be saved through Jesus. For many years, Mr. Armstrong partially realized the error of this assumption, but the full truth on this point did not come crystal clear to his mind until the last few years of his life. This truth, fully explained in Mystery of the Ages, is indeed mind-boggling. This book clears what has been fully clouded in mystery. It will open your eyes to the truth of these long-hidden mysteries. This enlightening volume thoroughly explains precisely what the Bible says about the seven great mysteries of life. It is free upon request. For more, visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Well, greetings, friends around the world. Now, I've been telling our radio audience and readers of The Plain Truth that a political union of 10 nations in Europe would rise, resurrecting the Holy Roman Empire of the Middle Ages. I was predicting this even before World War II began. Not many believed it then. Well, let me quote to you what I wrote in an article in The Plain Truth of July 1935, 4 years before World War II was started by Adolf Hitler. I'll just quote a little out of the center of that entire article that shows what the article was saying and what it was talking about. Listen, quote, "Out of the present Italy is to emerge a reincarnation of the once great and powerful Roman Empire by an alliance of 10 nations within its territory." That was 4 years before World War II began. Biblical prophecy revealed that it would start as an economic movement, that it would bring an era of unusual prosperity to Europe. It did start in March 1957, when six European countries, West Germany, France, Italy, Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg, signed the Treaty of Rome, creating what was called the EEC, that is, the European Economic Community. It has been known, of course, as the European Common Market, and it came into being, actual operation, that is, on January the 1st, 1958. Immediately, it began to bring economic prosperity to those six countries and has provided economic competition for Britain, for the United States, and for other countries around the world. For years, European nations have wanted to unite in a sort of United States of Europe. What they want is political union, but they've never been able to bring that about. While President de Gaulle of France lived, Germany would never have yielded to accept him as the political head of a union, including Germany, and the French would not accept a German. Long-range plans are already underway for a common currency in Europe, but other things are going to intervene in the meantime that I want to tell you about, and I predict that there will be a common currency a great deal sooner in Europe. Now, how did I know, as far back as 1927 even, that this coming United States of Europe would spring up in our time? I knew because it's revealed in biblical prophecy.
That, of course, was Herbert W. Armstrong speaking. I don't have the exact date on it, but it was back sometime in the 1960s. And yet, as he said on that very broadcast, he knew. And people who listened to him back in the day, they knew. Mr. Armstrong knew long before even that broadcast, that a powerful 10-nation union would rise out of Europe in these latter days. He knew in the 1950s that the European Economic Community, that that was the beginning stage of the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. He knew there would eventually be a common currency. He knew there would be a political union. He knew there would be a military union, eventually. He knew even before it happened that East and West Germany would eventually reunite, which they did in 1989. He knew that a revived German power would dominate a union of European nations, a union of 10 nations or kings. Today you see the EU with 28 member nations, I think 19 of them members of the Eurozone. But soon that will downsize. And many are already starting to talk about that. This is from a Reuters report back in 2011, a little over 3 years ago. It says, senior French and German civil servants have been exploring other ways of achieving the goal, either via an agreement among just the Eurozone countries or a separate agreement outside the EU treaty that could involve a core of around 8 to 10 Eurozone countries. I referred to this in a video we produced a year or two ago. Them talking about a core of 8 to 10 countries. And again, you could have read something like that in The Plain Truth back in the 1950s, Mr. Armstrong's magazine. In the 1950s or 60s, I've mentioned before this pink sheet that they used to mail out, Mr. Armstrong's organization. It used to mail out these pink sheets with the Bible Correspondence Course that was produced back in the 1950s and 60s, and the one that my father received in around about 1961. He received a letter, a pink sheet, with his lesson that was titled, A Hot World War III is Coming. Germany was responsible for both world wars, this letter explained. And in 1943, when Germany's top general, scientists, industrialists, and bankers, when they realized that they were about to lose the Second World War, they drew up secret plans for a third round. Right then, they did. And as this letter brings out, that Mr. Armstrong mailed to students of the Ambassador College Correspondence Course, as it explained, the first step in Germany's conquest, or its quest for world dominion, the first step was the creation of a United States of Europe. That's what this letter said back in 1961, or possibly before then, depending upon when it was produced originally. Let me just give you one short quote from the pink sheet. We know how the United States of Europe will be used by Germany to attempt world domination. Prophecy shows 10 kings, 10 dictators will arise in Europe and give their power to Germany. Now, you could say this is the signature, or was, it was the signature prophecy of Herbert Armstrong's 50-year ministry. Anyone familiar with his work, anyone familiar with The World Tomorrow or The Plain Truth Magazine, instantly remembers his many articles, booklets, radio programs, all the television shows on Bible prophecy and on what he said about Europe in particular. And then you look at the headlines today, like that Reuters report I gave to you from 2011. Or how about this one from last week? You know all about the Greek crisis. We've been talking about it a lot at the Trumpet, on the Trumpet Hour, with our Trumpet columnists. This is from June 19th, the unbearable logic of the European Union from the National Interest. It says, so far, the EU has not found a catalyzing event to allow the 28-nation confederation, and especially the 19 nations that use the euro, to create a unified nation with collective control over a single ledger for spending and debt. It says further on, rather than worrying about nations such as Greece or even the United Kingdom leaving the EU, perhaps nations such as Germany should be demanding that the nations that certainly will remain within the Federation agree to fiscal convergence in the near term. This would clearly delineate between countries that can accept such discipline and those that cannot, leaving a remaining core, it says, a remaining core EU that can realistically share a common currency. So we need to downsize, in other words. It says, when the EU's common currency was created over a decade ago, Europe's political leaders probably did not foresee a debt crisis in Greece as a catalyst for success, but it may be that the Greek debt crisis will provide the political impetus for the core nations of the EU, which are part of the Eurozone, to finally agree on completing the process of economic and political union. So this Greek crisis, really caused by Germany, as we've reported, it's now giving the EU nations the political impetus that it needs to finally come to an agreement for economic, political union. And of course, the military union will come along with that as it downsizes, as it gets to that core, that prophesied core. 10 nations or 10 kings. Look at what the Greek crisis is doing to the EU. And look at what the external threats, like from Russia, look at what that's doing. You think there's a push for a stronger military force in the EU because of what Russia's doing there in Ukraine and up against the Baltic states? Just a few months ago, I think this was back in March, when the European Commission President, Jean-Claude Juncker, he came out calling for the creation of a European army. Forget about NATO. Forget about the United States. We need a European army. He said, with its own army, Europe could react more credibly to the threat to peace in a member state or in a neighboring state. We need this. People are calling for it. It says a common European army, this is Juncker's comment, a common European army would convey a clear message to Russia that we are serious about defending our European values. We're serious, and Russia needs to know that we're serious about defending our European values. Of course, the problem with that, as the European Union currently is, you've got all these disparate parts, and every single one of them has a different idea of what European values is really about. And, of course, if there's a European army, the big question there is, who's going to lead it? Con Coughlin wrote at the Telegraph when Juncker came out with those comments saying why the European army wouldn't be able to work. He said the fundamental problem with this proposition is that without full political union, it has no chance of becoming a credible force. So long as fierce national rivalries exist at the heart of policymaking, a common army would quickly find itself reduced to a state of impotence if required to deal with any threat to an EU state. See, he's looking at it as he looks at the EU today. I mean, issues that would concern France or Britain or Germany, they'd be different than those facing Poland or the Baltic states. But what happens if you whittle it down to a core group of those 8 to 10 nations or those prophesied 10 kings? Well, if it's dominated by Germany, as Mr. Armstrong talked about back in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, then you're going to see a more unified approach economically, politically, militarily. You'll see that core group get behind those so-called European values. Jean-Claude Juncker, by the way, this is the same man who once said, "I am for secret, dark debates." That's the way it happens in this EU. That's the way it happens in this core that's coming. And it's about to spring on this world. It's going to happen fast. And you need to be looking for it. Let's look at Revelation 17 and just pick up a few scriptures here before we conclude. I mean, read what God says in His Bible about this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. It's happening right before our eyes. It's described in such vivid detail in the Bible. And yet most churches in the traditional Christian world, they just simply ignore this. They ignore these pivotal prophecies. They ignore Daniel 2, where God inspired His prophet to give us this incredible one-chapter overview of prophecy. God revealed through Daniel this vision of a great image representing four successive world-ruling kingdoms that lead right up to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And then in Daniel 7, the prophet describes four beasts, again representing these four Gentile kingdoms. But he puts a special emphasis on the fourth there in Daniel 7. He talks about this beast that has 10 horns, which the prophet says are 10 kings that shall arise out of or after the Roman Empire. That's talking about successive kings. And then there's the little horn that grew in the midst of them. In Revelation 13, the Apostle John discusses just one beast, the one that represented the fourth and final kingdom, that Roman Empire. This beast has seven heads and 10 horns. It's the one that received the deadly wound. And that's because the Roman Empire, which existed from 31 BC to AD 476, I mean, at 476, it looked like it was dead. But there would be 10 resurrections after that, seven of them dominated by that little horn of Daniel 7. Seven of them. A church-state union. A union of a great church, a great false church. And the political union coming out of the heart of Europe. Justinian, in 554, of course, was the one who recognized the supremacy of the Pope. And then you come here to Revelation 17, and God fills in the remaining details. Notice, verse 1, it says, "And there came one of the seven angels, which had seven vials, and talked with me, saying, Unto me, come here, I will show unto you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters." This woman, as you can see from Revelation 12, well, really from many passages in the Bible, it's meant to symbolize a great church, in this case, a false church. It's talking about an unholy union, church and state. Verse 7, "And the angel said unto me, Wherefore did you marvel? I'll tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has seven heads and 10 horns." Now, these are the prophecies that informed Mr. Armstrong over the course of his ministry. That great signature prophecy, as I said earlier. You saw it or heard it in that clip that I played for you. Why do you marvel? I'll tell you the mystery. The Bible interprets itself, in other words. Here's depicted a woman riding a beast. This means that a church would guide a political entity. Verse 8, it says, "The beast that you saw was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition." And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they beheld the beast that was and is not, and yet is. It sounds like awkward language there. But the reason it's worded the way that it is there in verse 8 is because Herbert Armstrong was on the scene for the sixth head. And that's why this is worded this way. He lived through the sixth resurrection. He prophesied about the seventh and final system. And now, here we are, witnessing that seventh and final resurrection. Verse 10, and there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, and the others not yet come, the seventh, in other words. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. That there implies that the seventh and final one would come on the scene after Mr. Armstrong's work. And it did. It's on the scene now. It's going to continue only for a short space. This unsteady mixture of iron and clay, as it's described as in Daniel 2, 2.5 years or so. But when it comes on the scene, when it comes together, there's going to be some real iron-like strength. Verse 12, and the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. So this here is referring not to 10 successive kings, but rather to 10 contemporaneous kings. This refers to the United States of Europe. These 10 horns here, they represent the same thing as the 10 toes of Daniel 2. And so it's by these passages that we know there will be 10 heads of state in Europe that join together, 10 nations, or perhaps groups of nations. They'll join together for 1 hour with the beast, it says. Verse 13, these have one mind and shall give their power and strength to the beast. They all have one mind. They understand the need for political union, for military union. There's a great power behind this formation. When you look at this kind of oneness, this kind of power, this kind of strength, it's not of men, and it's not of God either. Verse 14, these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb, it says, shall overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. Christ is coming to make war with nations. Christ is coming to overcome these powers of men. He's coming with the called and the chosen and the faithful. Here is his church. Here are his people. Right in the center of these dramatic events, fighting right alongside the Lamb to put down this evil beast power, finally and forever, so that the world can have rest and peace. We can all thank God for this prophecy. Christ and God's government, they're not going to be welcome at first. But when all forms of rebellion and resistance are put down, finally this world can experience the rest from warfare, from division and strife. That's why Jesus told us, when talking about the content of our prayer, that we should pray, "Thy kingdom come." Pray that prayer every day, and make sure that it's meaningful. Make sure that it means something. Thy kingdom come. If you want to study more about these prophecies, the beast power, who or what is the prophetic beast, is certainly a good place to start. Also, with respect to church history, history of the true church, and also the false church, there's so much about that in our new book, The True History of God's True Church. This came out just a few weeks ago, and if you don't have a copy, you can receive one at the trumpet.com website or just send us a request. Send an email to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, and kpcg.fm online. Thank you for listening to us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.